he goes, and the pitch swung on deep right field. Forget about it. That one's not coming back. A two-run shot for Bryce Harper. His second of the afternoon, his 28th of the year, and the Phillies close the Mets' lead to one. It's 4-3.
All right, well, that's going back to Saturday, of course. I'm waiting for, you know. There he is. Got to make way for Big Jim. Who was Big Jim Seltzer? Not Jim Morrison. Jim Croce.
There it is.
But Jim Morrison, even greater. And Croce was great. All right, 215-592-9494. Of course, Bryce Harper better than all of them. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Jim Morrison. All right, so let's get to the Twitter poll question of the day. We saw a lot this weekend with the Phillies, which is why we have the Twitter poll question brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Armin has the new 2025 Chevy Trax in stock now, starting at only $21,495. Together, let's drive. See Armin's inventory at ArminChevy.com. John, the poll question. How do you think people voted on this one? Other than getting close to winning the division, which clearly the Phillies are now very close and will definitely get done, what was the biggest thing that stood out to you this weekend with the Phillies? Three choices, John. Which do you think won the poll? A, Harper's power returning, that being the second of two homers in that game. B, Nola struggling as he did mightily on Friday. And it's kind of adding up a bit here recently. And C, Christopher Sanchez being outstanding on Saturday. And in a good way, that's adding up lately. John, which do you think won the poll?
It's got to be Bryce. It's got to be Bryce Harper. The power is back, and it was so decisively back with the 2-1 game.
Well, it did win the poll, but not by a ton. So Bryce, 44%. Nola struggles, 36%. And Sanchez being great, 20%. Guys, the Nola thing, I mean, they got to get him right. Now, we saw this last year. If you remember, and I don't know, Seltzer, was it right when the playoffs started?
Yeah,
he got better in September.
It was like the last start or two before the playoffs. Remember, he made the quote-unquote mechanical adjustment that we latched onto
and
ended up mattering? Yeah.
And it mattered a lot. He got really good again really quickly. So, all right, we'll see. And, of course, you know, when it's not a game day, we'll be talking more about the Phils and who should be the second starter and who should be the third starter, who should be the fourth starter, because you got three different options behind Wheeler. Here's the only thing we know for sure. Rangers not getting the second game.
No.
Okay, so like initially the question was who should get the third game, Ranger or Sanchez. Now the question is who should get the second game between Nola and Sanchez. And then it's like, well, okay, if it's Nola, then does Sanchez get the third game or does Ranger get the third game? So a couple things for Rob Thompson to figure out before the playoffs. All right, John DeFilippo in studio with us. We'll get his thoughts on Carson in a moment. Phone calls as well. By the way, James, how many times through the years, and I'd say more after 2017, did the name John DeFilippo come up on our show where people would lament that he was no longer here?
Nonstop, honestly. I guarantee you there has been no quarterback coach in the history of this city who's within like a thousand mentions of John.
Hated Josh McDaniel.
But,
you know, because he left.
No, but not here. No. Oh, blame McDaniel.
Blame McDaniel for Reichley. Yeah,
yes.
So, all right, so let's just
talk. He was glued. John DeFilippo and Frank Reich were glued. Just like on the playground, you'd be glued when you were picking
teams. Their names were said together.
Kids. Yeah. We glued you with Frank, and we perceived you with Frank. We viewed you with Frank as the reason, above all else, that transition was made seamlessly.
So here's the thing.
Our quarterbacks were playing the way they needed to.
Why couldn't the sequence, John, have just been different? I mean, frickin' Indianapolis hires, as Rhea just said, frickin' McDaniels, whatever the heck guy's name is. If they'd just taken Reich first, then you could have been the OC here instead of having to go to Minnesota.
Yeah, you know.
You would have been, right?
You never know how those situations are going to play out.
Yep.
I mean, you'd think so. You'd think so. I think that was the next line of succession. I don't know. I've never asked that question. It's weird the way things play out, and we talk about situations and those things like that. And probably going to Minnesota was probably not my best decision I've made in my coaching career. You know, as a person that, in, if you think, most of us all think we're most good people and you can work with anybody, and that's not always the case. It's just not. And in the National Football League, there's some ego there, and there's some things, and that, I'm not saying that there aren't some things I would have done differently as the offensive coordinator of the Vikings as well, But that being said, it just the philosophical differences between Mike Zimmer and I just ended up to be probably bigger than I anticipated. We tried to do what he wanted to do, but you have an $84 million quarterback, you have a $15 million tight end in Kyle Rudolph, you have Stephon Diggs that was making a ton of money. Yeah. You got Adam Thielen. You got Dalvin Cook coming out of the backfield with the 32nd, you know, ranked offensive line. Now, Pro Football Focus is a piece of judging things, but we've all seen throughout the course of time, if you're struggling up front at times, and I could have done a better job of helping those guys out. When you're struggling up front, it's hard to get the play started sometimes. And because we were struggling running the football, we used a quick passing game and smokes and those things to get the ball out and kind of create that part of the run game. And it just didn't work out. And you know, just looking back and self-scouting yourself like we always do in all of our careers, that probably wasn't the best decision to go to Minnesota.
Wow. Well, okay, so let's tackle
and I was happy for the Saints that they dropped a ton of points on Mike Zimmer this weekend.
Yes, he was.
I love it.
You could have a future as a talk show host.
We were
with those
all
kind
happy,
of comments.
Too, let me tell you.
All right, so...
Yeah, I didn't shed any tears on that one.
All right, I like it. All right, so... Let's talk about Carson for a sec, because when you go there, that's when things with Carson start to unravel. So obviously this is from afar for you at that point. But, I mean, look, there was two main questions I was really curious with you coming in here today. One, how'd you get Foles right before the playoffs? The other is, what happened to Carson Wentz? Well, I mean, he was so good, and then he wasn't, and it took a couple years to fully devolve. But what the heck happened?
You know, I think this city before... Our Super Bowl victory was so wanting that and wanted to be a Super Bowl city. And Carson was playing so good. I mean, let's call it what it is. He was going to be the MVP of the league.
No question.
I mean, in my opinion, probably unanimous. Okay, that's how good he was playing. And some of the plays that he made throughout the course of that season were incredible. So the bar for him was set very high to begin with. All right, because of that year. And you could see it coming in 16. He had a really bad game against Cincinnati on the road in that rainy day in 16. But other than that, he played pretty steady throughout the course of his rookie season, and there was a lot to be hopeful for. So you come into 17, and he starts playing well and all those things, and we're playing really, really well as a team. And then the injury happens in L.A., and you know, not a lot of people know this, but he had a little bit of a thigh bruise going into that game. And, you know, I was up in the box, and he got hit on – I just thought when he got up and was limping a little bit, he'd gotten hit on the thigh. And so, you know, as we were communicating over the headset, hey, is Carson okay? Oh, he's limping a little bit, this and that. Well, he stays in and throws a touchdown pass to Alshon.
Yep.
Okay, and which was an unbelievable play by him.
Now, let me just say this before you continue. You may not have seen it from the booth. I don't know. We, watching on TV, could see on his face that something was seriously wrong.
There was some concern. Yeah. Like,
his knee, concerned.
His knee buckled when he planted to get north. Mm-hmm. He planted his right foot, and you could see it buckle a little bit. That's when I became concerned when I saw it on the replay. But, you know, I think then we all know what happens. Nick goes in and performs well, and there's a statue of him in front of the link. There's a lot of pressure on guys. There is. There's a lot of pressure. Nick is beloved by this city, as we all know, what's going on tonight at the game.
Of course.
So that's a lot of pressure on a young man. And Carson's still a young guy at the time. He really is. And coming from a smaller program, you know, at North Dakota State, small town in the upper Midwest, hadn't been in the SEC to feel that type of pressure before. Hadn't been in the Big Ten to feel that type of pressure before. And I'm not saying you couldn't handle it. But we all handle those situations differently. And I think Carson did press to come back probably a little bit too early. Guys, and John, you well know this, you played. There's a difference between being physically ready to play and plus physically and emotionally ready to play, coming back from an injury like that. And I think that you become a little bit, you know, I don't want to say leery of planting on that foot or driving that foot, but you got to get hit on it a couple times. And I think... There was some. He pressed a little bit to come back because of the way Nick played and was playing, and I think that compounded into some other things. And unfortunately, then we saw the back the next year, and I think that played a lot into it.
What did you do that was different We heard stories of the good cop, bad cop approach, you know, where Frank would be one, you would be the other, and that was a good way to get through to Carson. But what was it that you did that no one else has been able to do that differentiated your style and the end result ultimately?
Yeah, I think you know, any quarterback I've ever coached, is there needs to be an accountability. There does. And you know, I give out a coin to the quarterbacks I've coached in the past, and it has a saying on it, and it basically says, when you play this position, you accept the responsibility of the whole building on your shoulders. And we enjoy that. And I took it from a couple of the military guys that have given me their coins in the past. So I created one for the quarterbacks that
I've coached. That's so cool.
And so there's a responsibility there. There's a responsibility to the city. There's a responsibility to the fans. There's a responsibility to every person in that building. And I think you have to be, you have to hold guys accountable. Mm-hmm. And if it's a single high, two high read, and we go to the wrong side, that has to be pointed out and coached. And I think there has been a lot written about the relationship between Carson and I. And some of the things that have been written as a coach, I will say they are, I'm like, wow, it really kind of really wasn't like that. Were Carson and I going out to dinner and those things off the field? No, we weren't. I think there needs to be a separation between the player and the coach. Mm-hmm. But there, I would say this, Carson and I have a tremendous mutual respect for each other. We have talked and seen each other since both our departures from Philadelphia. And there's always, I mean, if I text him or he texts me, we text each other right back. And there's just a really good mutual respect there. And I think that's what,
good.
That's a positive player-coach relationship.
What is Doug Nussmeier, the Eagles quarterback coach, what is Doug Nussmeier like as a QB coach? And what do you know of his relationship with Jalen?
Yeah, he's been around, well-traveled, been in a lot of systems. I think the fact that you've seen, I think this is his third stop now with Kellen. They were at Dallas together. They were at the Chargers together, and now they're in Philadelphia. I think that there's a, you know, kind of Frank and I were on the same wavelength in terms of the offense. Mm-hmm. I think he and Kellen are probably on the same wavelength. And whenever you can talk as much of the same language with two different people to the quarterback, I think that's a good thing. So there's a big-time trust there.
215-592-9494. Go ahead, John.
I am so excited to be talking to you, John.
Thing. Look, let me just say that. Let me do one more thing on Carson, if I may, for a second. Uh-huh. So here's the thing about Carson that disappointed me the most. Because I'm glad you brought up the injuries first, because I agree with you. I don't think people took enough inventory of how dramatically that affected his career. And then obviously we all talked for years, and we'll always talk about the Foles factor, the statue factor, the Super Bowl factor, the coming back from injury, fast factor, all that, okay? But the thing I never got, once he was back, 18, 19, 20 and all that, why did he feel like he had to hit a 5-run home run every play? You know, that's the thing that drove me nuts. It's like, I know Greg Ward wasn't great, but I can't tell you how many times I saw Greg Ward 6 yards right across the middle of the field open. I'd see Miles Sanders in the flat open, and he just wouldn't throw the ball, the short, easy, let's just start moving the chains. Like, he just wouldn't do that.
Right.
That's what drove me bananas.
Right.
And ultimately, I think cost him his job.
Probably did. It probably did. And you know, again, you press. There's times you press. And let's call it what it is. I mean, this is people in this town, and rightfully so, expect perfection out of the quarterback position. And I think when you hear some of those things and you feel the vibe, what's going on. You know if you're playing well or you're not.
Yeah.
I mean, and so I think you try to press and make those plays, and sometimes it's, like you said, it's just easier to check the ball down.
All right, let's go to the – I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
How difficult is it to teach a quarterback that difference between – that balance, I should say, between the aggression and living to play another down? That balance is what Carson was able to do when you were here. You know, the risk reward, it's such a fine balance.
Well, like, it's the challenge with Jalen right now.
Exactly.
Especially with this much, like on 1st and 10, with this talent, not necessarily tonight with no AJ, but generally speaking, this is, and even punts, like, my point is, there's enough talent on this team. I don't want Jalen to feel like he has to hit the 5-run home run every play.
And we're seeing signs already that he's trying to, and it really is like, dude, just be a point guard. Distribute, 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 and they'll go hit their heads on the goalpost. But how did that work?
It all comes back to situational football. There's a big difference between 1st and 10 and 3rd and 6. You know, and what time of the game? What's the score of the game? How well is defense playing? All those things. And you just continuously bring that up. And you, hey, let's take the flat on first and 10. We're better coaches and better quarterbacks on second and two. We all are.
Yeah.
All of us. The whole playbook's open. And here's the other thing. I just thought of something.
That's so simple.
I'm going to do a study. What was the quarterback's year like after he signs a big contract? Because, guys, there is pressure. I lived it with the quarterback that the Eagles are going up against tonight.
Sure.
Okay? Don't think that Kirk wasn't thinking about that $84 million guaranteed contract when he signed. That he had to make a play. We had to win every game. It was super. Very rarely when we were the Super Bowl or bust team that year, okay? Where Kirk was supposedly the one piece away from the Minnesota Vikings going to going to the Super Bowl,
sure,
and winning theirs. So we're all human. There's guys, there's a lot of pressure on those guys. And I'm not saying it's guys have to handle it better. Some guys have to handle it better because when you're given that, when you're given much, much is expected. And I get that. But guys handle pressure in different ways.
215-592-9494. John DeFilippo in studio with us here, of course. Coach Carson, Coach Nick, and Coach Kirk Cousins, who the Eagles will face tonight. Also a lot on Jalen as well. All right, coming up in 1 minute, back to the phones. A lot of calls here in 1 minute's time. Let me tell you about MHS Lift. You know, here's the deal, guys. We're all obviously hoping for winners from our teams, and we got two different squads going on right now that do have a shot to, you know, win it all this season. Well, let me tell you about a team I know for sure is a winner, big-time winner, the great team MHS Lift that's leading the way in the forklift industry in the Delaware Valley. Andy and Brett Levin and MHS Lift. You know, they've got an award-winning, nationally recognized material handling equipment company that, since 1970, has been offering everything that your warehouse needs, from forklifts and equipment rentals to racking solutions and warehouse optimization. MHS Lift, they do it all. And MHS Lift always puts the customer first with over 100 service technicians on call. MHS Lift maintenance programs ensure that your equipment runs smoothly, minimizing downtime and maximizing efficiency. MHS Lift has a simple mission to provide the best equipment, services, and integrated solutions to keep your operations moving forward. If you are ready to elevate your business, then call MHS Lift and call them today at 888-MHS-LIFT. You can also start with their website, MHSLIFT.com. That's MHSLIFT.com. All right, let's get some calls in here with Chris in Sewell, New Jersey. Good morning, Chris.
Hey, good morning, team. Great to have Coach DeFilippo there. And, Joe, you asked Coach a question I was going to ask him, and I'd like to know if I could elaborate on his answer a little bit.
Go for it. Yep.
So, Coach, my question was going to be, how do we get the most out of Jalen? And in your answer sort of alluded to you'd like to see some more design runs to utilize his strength, but I don't mean to challenge you. I have all the respect in the world for you, but is that really sustainable for an NFL quarterback, or could we not maybe use the RPO stuff that you used with Nick, which Nick executed so well, and could Jalen do that kind of stuff?
And let me just throw one more question in, John, before you answer that. Is the RPO thing losing any zip a couple of years into it now? Have defenses caught up to a portion of that?
I would say they've caught up some, and there's different types of RPOs, which, you know, we don't need to get into that clinic tonight, but there's some where you're reading a linebacker, there's some where you're reading the corner or a safety. So there's different types of those. Sure, they're catching up a little bit and reacting to it some, yes. And I think, Chris, that's a great question. I just think that, you know, as we alluded to, you got to be careful about how many of those you do, but I just think with his God-given ability – and he's a big man. I mean, he's a big guy, and you see him break tackles and all those things. I just think, you know, one or two a game to keep the defense honest. I think there are some safer ones you can design that aren't as harmful or is taking a chance with the quarterback as much. I just think the threat of the defense seeing him move, I think that scares those defensive coordinators a lot.
I don't disagree with you, and I do agree that's part of his natural God-given ability that you got to get the most out of. And I'd like to see some play action with Saquon. And how about a little two-back offense, Saquon and Gainwell?
Listen, either two backs or two tight ends. You'll see, you know, two tight ends more because the Eagles a lot of times will do 50% of that anyway. You'll certainly see that a lot. But, yeah, maybe tonight a little bit more two backs. Chris, give me a great answer. Who or what overstayed their welcome?
Well, I got two really good ones in case my first one was taken already.
Yep.
But you want one that's more Philly-oriented?
I want your best answer. What do you got?
Tobias Harris.
Wow.
That's a great answer.
I will say this. He was around longer than Ben.
Yeah, that's why it's kind of a better answer in a
way. I mean, we do know how it ended. A Zippo.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay? It was hard to believe that he didn't score.
I mean, it was... Man,
by accident.
He just really let him down.
Been able to get a bucket.
He really, really let him down.